We're going to be hearing about kindergarten, first grade, and then also SCRED that we talked a little bit about last time, where it's going to be presenting some information on performance of all day, every day kindergarten, where they've been tracking student performance of that. So looking forward to seeing as many of you that can make it up there. Thank you.
Thank you. And we also, for the visit, Two Harbors, followed by Cloquet, departure on Thursday. There'll be details further spelling that out tomorrow. Yeah. Any questions, just contact the committee administrator, Gretchen Walczak. There's also a revised schedule showing many additional meetings that are scheduled for the committee to go to for visits. For the presentation today on the overview of school bus safety, I thought it would be helpful to hear first from Captain Ken Urquhart, as the Department of Public Safety provides regulatory authority for the buses itself, the inspections, and as well for the licensing of drivers. In addition, the Department of Education, while not directly involved on those items, there's still an interest, as we have hundreds of thousands of students that are bused each day. So obviously the department, like us and each student and their parents, would expect it would be a safe trip. So Commissioner Segrin was nice enough to be here to provide some comments, and we have a great deal of background information that we can refer to as well. So I'd like to call first on Captain Urquhart, and if Commissioner Segrin could join him, and we'll focus perhaps the first 30 minutes or so with their testimony and your questions. Welcome.
And thank you, Mr.
Chairman. For the
record,
please state your name.
Members, my name is Ken Urquhart. I'm the commander of the commercial vehicle section of the Minnesota State Patrol. One of the hats I wear in that position is I'm the commissioner of public safety's designee as the pupil transportation safety director. A number of years ago, that responsibility was moved into our department, and I inherited this responsibility approximately 4 to 5 years ago from my predecessor. On request of the chairman, I put together a brief information sheet that gives you some idea of the activities that we're involved in that's connected with school bus transportation in Minnesota. There's a breakdown of the 2006 school bus inspections, basically by type. There's some inspections listed there that are unannounced at terminals that include both drivers and vehicles that did not have drivers in them. There's some random enforcement that was primarily done in 06 in the metro area. And then there's a comment there about the national standards on school buses. Basically, every 5 years, the states meet in Missouri to discuss and promulgate school bus standards. And, of course, depending on which state it is, they adopt certain standards. Some adopt all the standards. We have historically adopted the bulk of those standards every 5 years, and we have not done that as of yet with the 2005 standards. School bus drivers, there's a breakdown there about how the specific endorsed driver is regulated, some of the measures they have to go through to receive a school bus endorsement, and then the ongoing requirements of that driver's license. And so in a nutshell, basically, This is some background that we're involved in. We're also involved in working very closely with the two associations that are involved in school bus transportation, the Minnesota Association of Pupil Transportation, and then, of course, the private contractors, which is the School Bus Operators Association. We interact with them through their train-the-trainers process, their conferences, their monthly safety meetings. So as you can see by the description, there's a cooperative effort going on here to ensure that school bus safety in Minnesota remains the safest transportation on the highway.
Thank you, Captain. Questions? Senator Olsen.
When I wear another hat, one of the things I do is I estimate repairs on school buses after accidents and those kinds of things. And when I hang around bus garages, I got to say, when they know that you guys are coming, they do nothing but try to get those buses in A1 shape. So I was kind of interested in if you have numbers of buses that fail inspections.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, yes, we do collect those and through a database that we share with our federal colleagues on the number of violations that we detect on every vehicle and also the level of that violation, whether it's serious enough to place that bus at what we call out of service, so they're not allowed to operate the vehicle until they correct some of those things. I can certainly provide those to the committee. It's quite extensive because you can see there's thousands of vehicles here. And you're right, Senator, when they know we're coming, the bulk of the industry goes to great lengths to prepare their vehicles for us. There's other ones, and I'll tell you this, that they use us as their maintenance program. They wait till we come, and then they get up to speed. And, of course, our recommendation is to have an ongoing maintenance program. If you're changing that oil in that bus on a monthly basis, they know what the inspection entails. Inspect your vehicle to ensure it's up to speed and deal with it at that point in time.
Can I do a follow-up?
Senator Olsen, followed by
and is
Senator
that your
Baha.
Impression that most of the bus companies, whether public or private, are maintaining the buses in a highly safe manner?
Yes. My true belief is that the bulk of them have a very good maintenance program that cycle around a short timeline, and they get those buses in on a regular basis, and they're very good about maintaining those. From what we've seen on our vehicle-only inspections, they have been maintaining them very well. I'm not going to tell you that there aren't some folks that need some improvement, because there is.
Thank you.
Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Captain, as I'm looking through the this sheet that you provide us with, I have a question. It says the criminal background check is required every 4 years and upon new application, and then further down, school bus companies required to check criminal driver record annually. So am I correct in reading that you're only checking the criminal driver's record versus on an annual basis versus an actual criminal record?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, every applicant or renewal must go through that criminal background check, which includes their driver's license history. The school bus operator, whether it's the district or that private contractor, is required by law to check the driver history of that driver. So there is a difference there, Senator. If that wasn't clear, I apologize for that.
But Mr. Chair and Captain, but so are you saying that once you've been hired and you've passed that, then we wouldn't again look at their criminal record for 4 years?
That is true. There is possibilities, of course, because information comes to us unofficially through lines of intelligence. You know, drivers tell us about other drivers and so on, and we try to get on top of those, and we do check criminal backgrounds in lieu of the four-year period when we get information about a certain driver.
Mr. Chair and
Senator
Captain,
Bonoff.
Do you think that's sufficient? Have you seen that we've had problems with, you know, particularly when you're dealing with young children? I know we all get concerned about things like sexual predators and, you know, in terms of a bus driver, offenses like that. Do you think that we're doing what we need to in that area to maintain scrutiny?
Captain?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, my personal feeling is that we certainly would like to be checking these backgrounds much more often, but I think the four-year period coincides with the renewal of the license is certainly a minimum. We do talk to with the industry folks. A lot of them are very good about going beyond that criminal background as employers. So there is other standards beyond the department there. And, of course, some of them rely on the absolute minimum. And my children ride school bus, Senator, I'm passionate about this. Personally, my belief is we should never have a child injured on a bus because those vehicles are designed to protect them. And these drivers are the most regulated drivers in the country. They jump through a lot of hoops to get licensed. And there are some folks, though, that shouldn't be driving. We find them, quite honestly, we find them periodically out there driving when they shouldn't be.
Thank you.
Yes, Senator Henn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Captain. Thank you for your testimony. And as a former school bus driver back in my college days, I drove a bus for a couple of years. I appreciate you're correct that it is quite demanding to get that license and maintain it. And I think that you can't forget that you're carrying kids around in the back, and it really makes a difference in how you approach your driving. One question I have, and it's not really on your sheet, and I'm trying to recall, I believe we had a couple of years ago some testimony about seat belts on buses for kids, and typically that that isn't part of what we do for safety, and I know there's a reason for that, and I can't remember what the reason is, and I wanted just to have you, if you know, to comment on what is the status with seatbelt use for children. I know we have drivers wear them, but typically children don't on the buses, and how does that work?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, presently all drivers that operate school buses are required to wear their safety belts, and we have seen some issues with those folks either not wearing them or not wearing them correctly. And so we've been dealing with that through some enforcement and education, of course. Belts that are safety restraints that exist on buses that are available to the children are also required to be worn if they're there. Not all the buses have safety restraints on them. And, of course, the larger buses today are designed to be compartmentalized. And if you look at the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration's information or data on safety of school buses, you'll see that it's 7 or 8 times safer to ride that bus than it is for you to drive your child to school. And the bus is designed to keep the kids inside the vehicle when there's a crash, and I think you've seen some crashes lately that have demonstrated that. And from my perspective, the buses are performing the way they're supposed to. And yes, some children did get injured, but not as seriously as they would have if they would have came out of those vehicles or if the bus wasn't designed the way it is today. That's a discussion, I'm sure, for the future, whether or not the buses in Minnesota should have safety restraints. There's a lot of what I call tails to that issue. You know, capacity, who's responsible for wearing them properly, all those things come to the table. I think they've been discussed a number of times. As far as the department representative, if that becomes a law, we'll certainly enforce that to the best of our ability.
Thank you. Senator Olsen.
When you were talking about Senator Bonhoff's concerns earlier, are there any recommendations? You know, you were talking about the law. Well, if you need a law changed or any recommendations, is there anything that you would bring forward to this committee or that you would want looked at?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, at this point in time, I don't have a departmental recommendation for the committee on whether or not that should be seriously looked at.
Whether it's seatbelts or whether it's in the process of, you know, background investigations, because I do have a concern that it seems like these things always come to light after something happens. Something recently happened that was a driver was on a suspended driver's license and hadn't notified the company of that. So there was... I guess there's no amount of reporting that the company probably would have found out about that. But so I think for whatever, I guess it's going to have to be that in certain situations there's the self-reporting of a driver, whether they've had their license suspended or not. But that's why I'm kind of thinking maybe there are some tools that you might need. And if you do think of something, you know, I think that we'd sure want to know about it.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, I greatly appreciate that. My personal feeling on the driver situation is that they're the ultimate variable in that equation. They're the one operating the vehicle. They ultimately should have that responsibility to whether it's to inform the employer of their situation, whether they're suspended or they have a violation. They're the ones that are driving those kids to school, to and from school every day. Their sole purpose, in my eyes, is to transport those children safely. That's the bottom line. That's why they're there. And they need to be responsible. And if they choose not to be responsible, then that's something we can look at. And if you know, the committee has some ideas about tools for us to improve that, we certainly would be receptive.
Senator Carlson.
Mr. Chair and Captain, back to the seatbelt issue with children in the school buses. Do you know if there are any states that do mandate seatbelts in buses and whether there's any statistics on those?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, off the top of my head, I don't recall if any states require those right now. I know there's a couple out there, but I don't know who they are off the top of my head. There is a national organization. I could certainly do some research and get that for you and get it to you.
Thank you.
Further questions? And, Captain, thank you. If you could stick around, there may be a need for additional questions, clarifications. And thank you, Commissioner Segrin, for being here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I just have some brief statements for you today. Just to kind of give you some statistical information, we have about 820,000 public and non-public students that are transported every day to school and back home. And the Minnesota Department certainly recognizes the importance of school bus safety and appreciate the public safety's good work that they do. We have nationally, for every 100 million passenger miles traveled, the school bus fatalities total 0.01. This is compared to 0.94 in passenger cars, 0.06 for airplanes, and 0.04 for passenger trains. So school buses certainly have the lowest fatality rate of any of the modes of transportation that we're familiar with, and that kind of reemphasizes what the captain said from the public safety perspective. We also wanted to give you some information. We look back to the last current data that we had as far as bus fatalities, and in 2005 there were 7 fatal accidents involving school buses. However, 6 of those deaths involved the car running into the bus, and so it was the actual passenger car and the person in the passenger car that was fatally injured and not anyone on a school bus, and there was 1 injury or fatality in a school bus. We do not oversee any aspect of school bus maintenance, compliance with safety regulations, driver licensing, or school bus safety initiatives. The Minnesota Department of Public Safety does do that. We feel that our school buses are a very safe mode of transportation for our students. School districts do have some responsibilities. They have to have a comprehensive written policy for their students in regard to entering and exiting buses. They have to have practice. If you remember your children, if you remember, there was always some yearly training for kids to be able to exit and enter buses safely. There's also guardian responsibilities that are written out so that the parent or guardian also is aware of their responsibility for what their children should be doing. There's discipline policies when a child misbehaves on a school bus, so school districts have to craft those policies to make sure that they're clear. There is some intra-district reporting of discipline, so school districts have to take note of the numbers of maybe disciplinary cases that they may have on a school bus. And then there are Type 3 vehicles that the school districts are responsible for having some oversight over. And the captain can probably remind me what Class 3, I think that's small vans that have a certain capacity and have to be regulated, and there are rules that govern that. And there are emergency procedures that school districts have to make sure that they have in case of a fire or some kind of a process that may happen. And then they have to follow the rules that public safety certainly sets up for maintenance and equipment, and they have to have a system in place for making sure that they are complying with those rules. So that's kind of basically what we do as a department. The school districts themselves really have a lot of the local responsibility for following through on the rules and regulations that public safety sets up. They also have some, if they have bus monitors on their buses, they have to make sure that the monitors, that there's a process for the rules that govern the monitor duties, et cetera. So that's basically what our oversight or what local school districts oversight. And the School Boards Association may want to comment on some of the things that they have done. I know they're very good about creating model policies for school districts in regard to many issues, and I'm sure that they have also helped school districts in implementing some model policies for bus safety, too.
Thank you, Commissioner. We do have handouts showing the statutes referred to. Are there questions? Okay, thank you. And I did see that Ms. Schwab is here. If you did want to offer any perspective from the School Boards Association, we do have reference to the fact that policies are to be developed by each district, and if there's any update, you could reflect on that for us now or in the future. Okay. We have some recommendations that are being developed, and this is not all we'll be hearing, but the next group will be Brad Lundell, David Peterson, I believe Jan Vanderwaal from Roseville is not here, and Gary Botzik.
Jan is
here. Oh.
Late arrival.
Okay. And
buses were running 2 hours late. And
but,
buses were on time in Roseville. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Brad Lundell, and I'm here today working with the Minnesota Association of Pupil Transportation, and the experts that are with me will be providing the bulk of the testimony, and I'll simply be giving, you know, starting with some opening remarks, kind of framing some of those issues. First of all, I do want to thank our partners in the Minnesota Department of Education and the Minnesota Department of Pupil of Public Safety. Every month, the Minnesota Department of Education hosts a transportation issues meeting that's run by a man named Robert Fisher. He does a great job. We talk about a lot of these issues that we'll be talking about today at those meetings, and we get a kind of a good idea as to what's happening throughout the state and some of the issues that are emerging, not only in terms of pupil safety and transportation safety, but also in terms of funding and other things as well. I also want to thank Captain Urquhart and Sergeant Bartles. I don't think I can find two more devoted public servants than those two gentlemen. They work tirelessly, and I think sometimes that they work too tirelessly. And because over the last 4 years, we've seen the balance, we've seen the budget balanced throughout state government, oftentimes by reductions in the state complement. And I think one of the places where we're seeing some reductions that we've found a little bit problematic is the in the areas of school bus safety, not the safety, but the number of people that are working in that area. And it's not, again, this is not any comment on how hard the people work there, but we did once have an office of school bus safety, and that's now been folded into Captain Urquhart's division, and it is kind of troublesome at times. Not troublesome, again, dealing with Captain Urquhart, because he's, as I said, a tremendous public servant, but just that we used to have a presence that we no longer have, and I think that that's something that we would like to reestablish. And also, I know that Captain Urquhart's going to be coming forward. There are some other things we can do besides add complement. The self-inspection concept that he's going to be coming with later in the session is something I think that we need to have discussed as well. But with that, I'll turn it over to Dave Peterson from St. Paul Schools and Jan Vanderwaal from Roseville Schools to talk about our MAPT, MSBOA, I think Mr. Botzik is here as well, to talk about the provisions that were in this bill. A lot of this bill was introduced last year, but because there was no conference committee, as kind of education policy was put together with a strike everything amendment at the end of the session, most of these provisions are the provisions that dealt with school bus safety, these kind of technical updates, were not part of the final bill last year. And so where a lot of it's repeat, there are some couple of new things. And with that, I'll turn it over to those two gentlemen. Thank you, or three gentlemen. Thank you.
Welcome. Mr. Rieger, members of the committee, my name is David Peterson. I'm with the Minnesota Association of Pupil Transportation, MAPT. We represent school district transportation operations. I'd like to take 5 or 10 minutes more to go just in general bus safety, and then take another 10 minutes or so and go through our draft school bus technical correction type bill. I have some additional statistics from the Minnesota Department of Education website for the 2004-2005 school year. In that school year, there was $428 million spent on school transportation, and 821,000 students were transported. The mix of buses is 58% private contractor buses and 42% district-owned buses. However, many districts both contract and own their own buses, so in total there is 208 bus districts that own at least some of their school buses. I do have a handout I'd like to refer to. And while this would be distributed, I'd like to just continue on with a couple other comments. MAPT and MSBOA, the contract association, have been very proactive in bus safety and done a number of projects. We sponsor billboards, radio PSAs. We have safety materials for students such as coloring books, and we do driver training seminars. In 1987, the school bus community came out with driver training videos that are still being sold on a nationwide level. In addition, in 1990, we came out with student videos that are being sold on a national level. Subsequently to that time, we came out with the nation's first fully animated school bus safety video. And then we made this the first DVD bus safety material in the nation. Subsequent to that, we made it into multiple languages, four languages on a DVD. And since that time, we've come out with a CD interactive game for school children. And again, all these materials are being sold on a nationwide basis. And I see the handouts going around. And this handout shows that there's about 25 million students nationwide that are transporting school bus, and about 25 million students that are transported by other means. There's about 20 fatalities with the school bus students, and close to 800 fatalities of students being transported by other means. So as a composite, school buses are about 40 times safer than other means of transportation. And jumping back, in 1994, the legislature asked for a study of school busing in Minnesota. Task force was put together and made recommendations in 1994, and the legislature adopted a substantial amount of those regulations. One of the recommendations was for school busing to be shifted from the Department of Education being the primary agency to the Department of Public Safety being the primary agency. Nationwide, about 80% of the time, Department of Education is the primary school bus agency. The first year this occurred, Major Glenn Gramsci was in charge. He had a full-time job of school bus safety. After he retired, Dennis Lazenberry had school bus safety duties for about 5 years, but it was on a part-time basis. And since Dennis Lazenberry retired, again, about another 5 years now, Captain Urquhart's been in charge of bus safety. But again, Captain Urquhart's in charge of all trucking in the state of Minnesota also. So with the budget crunches, there's been a reduction of duties or time available from our state leadership on bus safety. However, Department of Education does do an excellent job with the resources that they do have. I've heard Captain Urquhart say a number of times that the crashes that are occurring are not so much because of the vehicles, but more because of the drivers. And it looks like there's a need for more driver training. In the initial handout that Captain Urquhart presented, he showed that he did start a program to have his inspectors spot check the drivers for stopping railroad crossings, having valid license, having their pre-trip forms on hand. And as a percentage, there's not very many drivers, but to me, as the school bus administrator, just to have several people in any of these categories is way too much. And I applaud Ken Urquhart for this program. After the 1994 school bus reform, the state required 8 hours annual in-service training for school bus drivers. Several years later, that was reduced to 4 hours a year of annual in-service training for bus drivers. And currently, there's 0 hours of annual in-service training required for drivers in Minnesota. The only statistics I've seen on a nationwide basis are from the 1989 National Resource Council Special Report 222, and they had a summary of 40 states that responded to the survey. There was quite a range of in-service training. Many states only required the local school district to provide in-service training at their discretion. The highest level was West Virginia, which required 16 hours of annual in-service training. Some of the larger states, Florida, Texas, required 8 hours annual in-service training, and California required 10 hours annual in-service training. And so it looks like there's an area that we could be doing more for is providing more in-service training to our drivers. So in summary on the bus safety, in 1994, after the school bus reform bill was adopted. We had one full-time major at the Department of Public Safety working the bus safety. With the budget cuts over the years, that's been reduced, and it would be nice if we could get back to having a full-time major devoted solely to school bus safety. And second off, it looks like 8 hours of annual service training for drivers would be beneficial for bus safety in our state. After these comments, I want to move on to the draft school bus bill that we have in front of us. Unless anybody has any comments or questions on the overview I just gave on bus safety in Minnesota.
Questions on the overview? Please proceed.
Okay. In the school bus bill, there's 16 sections. I'm going to give an overview of those sections quickly, and Jan Vanderwall will go in detail on a couple of these sections. First off, in section one, the school readiness program, sometimes those students ride on buses with other students. Normally under state accounting guidelines, when different groups of students ride the same bus, cost is allocated, probably on a headcount basis. There is currently in law an exemption for school readiness students that ride on regular school buses. If they don't generate any additional costs, it's not necessary to allocate costs to that program. We'd like to expand that law to include if school readiness students ride on special education buses with other students and there's no additional cost, that no cost allocation is necessary to the school readiness program. Second off, in section two, right now in the law, all students in grades 9 and 10 need to have training on how to drive a vehicle around a school bus when the school bus stop arm is in use. This training is also required under student driver training law, so it may be somewhat redundant, and we're recommending to strike the training for students in grades 9 to 10 and just go with the training required under the student driver training provisions. Also under section 2, currently there is an annual certification to the superintendent of schools that bus safety training has occurred. We think the general practice is not for districts to certify to the district that they did their job, so we would recommend that the language be changed, that just upon request the district transportation office report to superintendent that the training has occurred. Section 3 has to do with allocation and a transportation cost, and this point here I'd like to turn this part over to Jan Vanderwall.
Mr. Chair, I'm Jan Vanderwall from Roseville School District and Minnesota Association for Pupil Transportation. The allocation is a finance proposal, not so much technical in the other, and I think will need to be referred to finance division for review as well. We went through a process. Let me give you just a brief history. In transportation, there are no revenue-generating portions of transportation. We get revenue from the state based on how many students we have enrolled in school, except in one area, and that is in special needs transportation. Some districts figured this out early on and started allocating portions of superintendent salaries and others into the special needs transportation area, and Mr. Melcher, being responsible as he is, recognized this wasn't proper, and so we went through some conversations about how to properly get allocations and to make sure that improper allocation processes were communicated out and that school districts would cease from doing this. That didn't happen very quickly, and so they came back and put in law an allocation process and in procedure. And but as we went through that, you could allocate your costs based on how many students you had, costs on how many miles the bus drove or how many routes. And it kind of as a kicker, when that bill happened, we also suddenly found that charter costs were in there. Now, there are some districts, I do also work as a consultant in school districts, and there are some school districts where the basic idea of a charter is when you take kids from school to a football game or to a field trip. I call that a charter. And the average cost of that is somewhere around $100. Could be $150, could be a lot more if you're going up to Duluth or whatever. But there are some districts out there that had contracts where the charter cost was like $12. So it was a little bit of a poor allocation there. And again, this was loading it into other areas. And the department's decision was to have every district go through a very complex allocation cost, including charters, which are not on the normal radar. Everybody in our district orders charters, including community ed, other things, all of a sudden trying to bring those in. And so this is a compromise that we worked out with, almost worked out with the department last year, and then as it got into legislation, this allocation process was let go because of the lack of the conference committee. I know that wasn't as clear as it could be, but neither is the allocation process.
Questions on what was just presented by Mr. Vanderwall? Okay.
The next section, Section 4, are also turned over to Jan Vanderwall. Currently in the state, there's a program that allows drivers to drive small buses without a commercial driver's license as long as 13 conditions are met. Several districts are participating in this program. That program is only for students on field trips, not for to and from school pickups. And there's a new classification of school bus on the federal level called a Model E Functional School Activity Bus. It's the same bus as a regular bus, only could be painted any color and does not have the eight-way system or stop arm on it. So there's a cost savings by using those buses. And Jan, do you have any comments on that program or being used in Roseville?
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Vanderwall.
We have, in Roseville School District, we have bought in the last several years three activity buses. They are 14-passenger van chassis, but they look, you know, with a school bus body on them. I'm sure you've seen those type driving around, and we have often used those for, not these, but, you know, when you normally see them as a school bus, they are used mostly for special needs and other low-density programs. Our activity buses are used in our district on a daily basis. During the day, we're taking kids to and from work sites, disabled kids that are going out and getting work experience. After school, we're taking kids on adapted athletics, also the debate team and the smaller sports teams are using these buses. And then on weekends, they oftentimes are going on longer field trips. I think they went down to Rochester for a wrestling tournament. I don't think that's going to have to worry about that for couple more weeks now. But things like that have, these activity buses have just really been a great use for us. In the past, we've used them for, we've done this kind of service with minivans, which are called Type 3 vehicles. They're legal in the state. They're inspected by Mr. Bartle's inspectors, and the activity buses are inspected by them as well. One of the things that I would hope would happen is that we would find that these multifunction buses would be inspected in the same way that school buses are. The difference on these buses versus a minivan, two things. First of all, minivans are smaller. They go up to 8 passengers usually, and the law allows for 10, and these buses can be up to 14 passengers, so you can get a whole team on one bus instead of having to use two. The second thing that you will want to know about is the 15-passenger vans, the ones that you see driving around. No school districts use them. They're not allowed. Those vans have no armor on the sides of them at all and no protection for the people inside, and they're highly unstable, especially as they get more fully loaded. And those are the ones that periodically around the country you hear about, and the 15-passenger vans. And they have, they're just a strictly a van chassis with a van body on it, and are unsafe. And we've had them out of our district, I think, for at least 20 years.
Senator Olsen.
There's an issue with these now, and I'm trying to remember off the top of my head if it's because do they need to have a bus endorsement to drive these, or do they not need to have a bus endorsement to drive these smaller vans?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Vanderwall.
Bus drivers have a regular bus, you know, the activity bus drivers have a regular bus driver's license, but they need to have the bus driver physical submitted to the school district. They need to go through a pre-trip inspection every day with the vehicle, and they also need to have training on an ongoing basis. Not as extensive, but training anyway on the processes of using an activity bus. And they absolutely cannot use them to take kids to and from home.
Senator Olsen.
I believe the issue that I was referring to, I think it's maybe in smaller school districts where they may have a coach take the bus, you know, if it's a debate coach or speech or a smaller team, that because of the size of the school district, it may be more economical for them to have the coach be the driver. So, you know, under those kinds of circumstances, do they have to have training or a license for those?
Mr. Mayor, what?
Mr. Chair, Senator Olsen, the drivers need to have some training, but it's not as extensive as a school bus driver because they don't have to pass the school bus driver endorsement and have a CDL, a commercial driver's license. And it's up to the district to monitor these and do the bus driver, the license and background checks. It's not a part of the mainstream school bus process. And on one hand, you say, well, that's not as safe as if they had a school bus endorsement, but on the other hand, it's not so much of a hassle, so the coaches are actually willing and able to drive buses. And as a matter of fact, in all of my cases, that's who drives the bus. When those teams go on the road, it's a coach. We don't have separate drivers for those.
Senator Rummel.
Mr. Chair, and my question is, with the multifunctional school activity buses, are they included in the statistics that we were given earlier about bus safety, or do we have separate statistics about bus safety or accidents with these vehicles?
Perhaps that'd be for Captain Urquhart.
Senator, I believe I can answer that question.
Okay. Mr. Peterson?
We're proposing that the new category of multifunctional school activity bus be allowed in Minnesota. Currently, there's about 5,000 being sold annually nationwide, but the program hasn't begun in Minnesota because it's a relatively new classification bus. However, the current program where the Type A small school bus is driven by coaches without CDL, those are included in the school bus statistics.
They are. Thank you.
Thank you. Please proceed.
Okay. The next section of the bill is Section 5 and 6, which would prohibit school bus drivers from making personal cellular phone calls. The National Transportation Safety Board is recommending that states adopt laws to prohibit school bus drivers from using cell phones, period. As our two associations, MAPT and MSBOE, surveyed our membership, we found that the cell phone is very handy in lieu of two-way radio system in certain situations, such as a field trip where the bus is out of range, a weekend trip where there's no one at the bus garage, maybe a special education situation where there's confidential information. So we put our language in the proposed bill for drivers not to be allowed to make personal phone calls on cell phone while driving the school bus. Section 7 is toughened requirements. School bus drivers must wear a seatbelt. And basically, in the current law, there is a year set. Vehicles constructed after December 31st, 1994, I believe. And actually, school bus drivers should always be wearing a seatbelt regardless of when the bus is constructed. So just a minor technical correction. Section 8 through 14 is the national standards that Captain Urquhart referred to. Buses meet two federal construction standards. One is the Federal Motor Vehicle Safety Standards. Example, one of those is the strength of the body so that a bus, if it's in a rollover, will support 1.5 times its weight so the bus does not become crushed in a rollover incident. The second set of standards is a voluntary by the school bus industry. It's called the National Congress of School Transportation Standards. From these standards arrived the national yellow school bus color. The state of Minnesota uses the National Congress standards as a basis for Minnesota law, with some exceptions. Those National Congress meets every 5 years, and so now there's a need to update to the 2005 National Congress standards. The most likely thing I see controversial in those changes is the height of the seat back. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration has recommended to Congress that the school bus seat backs be raised 4 inches. That's because of a case of a severe accident, kids are bouncing around. If the seat back is a little higher up, there's a little more protection from the kids to remain in that small area. The downside on something like that is if the seat back's a little bit higher, then the bus driver has less ability to see the kids in his mirror, and so there's more likely to be students misbehaving. The way we worded it in this proposed language is it would be a district option to have their seat backs raised 4 inches.
Mr. Chair, a comment on that, it goes back to the seatbelt question earlier. The seat backs were raised in 1977 up to the 24 inches so that kids wouldn't fly out of the seat and go forward. That's the compartmentalization process. This 28 inches is an additional safety measure because some of the bigger kids can still get over the tops of those 24-inch seats. And the seat backs are made of a strength so that three kids can go into that seat. It will bend, but it will not break. It will hold those kids in place. And I don't know what I can see some gray hair here, so there are some people who rode in buses and had those metal bars in the backs of the seats. Those are now padded so that when you hit them, you don't lose your teeth anymore.
Okay, that's reassuring.
In the 2002 National Transportation Safety Administration report to Congress, they mentioned that if seatbelts were on all school buses throughout the country, perhaps one student a year's life would be saved. However, conversely, if a bus has seatbelts on it and for some reason the bus became submerged or caught fire, then the kids are more riskier wearing seatbelts. So it's questionable whether seatbelts provide more safety or are causing more safety hazard. The next section, Section 15, would allow 8 hours of driver and service training in lieu of competency certification. Right now with Minnesota law, for a driver to drive a school bus, they first have to go through the steps of obtaining a driver's license. And after obtaining a driver's license, have to be certified competent by their employers to drive a school bus by using a training program established by the Department of Public Safety. For many drivers, that's receiving the same training year after year, and we feel that if we allow an option of 8 hours in-service training, that would expose drivers to different areas of school bus safety and good driver habits. Along with that, we may propose having a requirement that each driver receive 8 hours of annual in-service training, but currently that's not in the draft bill before you. And then the final section is Section 16, which would allow Department of Public Safety to make rule changes without going through the rulemaking process. There's a couple of items that are necessary because of change in state law in the past and because of current practice. One example is on the vans, the state used to require on the back of the van stop at railroad crossings. The law has changed where that's no longer required on vans because as vans were doing that in the early morning hours in the dark and people didn't see the sign, there were sudden stops of almost in the van or hitting the vehicle to stop for the van. And it's, I believe, more safe for vans not to be using that stop at railroad crossing. And
Senator,
then another change is...
Excuse me, Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question about Section 15 with respect to training and language. I have been part of some situations in previous schools with my children where we have had some problems related to communication with young children that don't speak English. And in a couple of instances, the drivers didn't speak English very well, and they were not able to communicate with the children. And so I have been part of situations where the child does not speak the language well and is unable to communicate with the driver, and situations where the driver is not able to speak English well and is not able to speak with the children in the bus. And I wonder how you handle this, or if you have any plans or any ideas of how you could use training to deal with situations like that, where you have districts like mine in Minneapolis, where you have really a high number of children that don't speak the language well. And I understand that many districts are trying to hire drivers that speak different languages, but how do you assess their ability to speak in English well enough to deal with emergency situations?
I would say, Senator and Mr. Chair, basically we just try and do the best we can under the circumstances. I'm employed by St. Paul Schools, and we have a number of languages in St. Paul. Sometimes we get calls from parents that speak Hmong and can barely speak English, but fortunately we have an employee in our department that speaks Hmong, so that parent gets referred to then district employee. And then at the bus garage, there's also some drivers that through the two-way radio communication system, we can communicate and get answers. But we don't have any plans in place, and it's just kind of a do we best we can under the circumstances.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator,
I would like to ask, is this a problem for some of your districts? Is this a safety issue?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Vandewall.
Senator Torres Ray, one of the things that you're talking about is in an emergency situation, what we have required, there is a requirement that all kids receive training in their classroom about bus safety. And I believe if we haven't addressed it, what we need to do is make sure that in the classroom we train the kids on how to understand their driver in the certain words that they would need to use, which would be evacuate or sit down, those kinds of things that are really the issues that happen when you're under an emergency. Really, you either have the kids stay on the bus or you evacuate the bus, and those are the things we need to train. And certainly in the classroom, kids are learning in language they understand. Makes some sense as the right place for it to happen. We can't expect drivers. We have drivers that, just like you're saying, in my district, in Roseville District, that some of them don't speak English as well as others. But we try to make sure that they have the right words to say in the emergency. It doesn't have to be complex. It has to be simple so that it gets done right.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to ask if training is provided to deal with emergency situations with children that don't speak English. That's just what I wanted to know. Is it provided or not?
It's provided in the classroom, but I'm not
sure
that it's provided to the children. Right?
Yes, I know to the children it is, but to the drivers?
That's something we haven't talked about, and I think that it's a point we certainly will address as we go forward here.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
It's noted for the record. Thank you.
Senator Wigger had one more comment on the Section 16 proposal to allow Department of Public Safety to change the rules of outgoing through rulemaking process. And this is a situation where on some highways where there's a right turn lane, the driver has no choice but to make the bus stop in the right turn lane. Consequently, there is a rule that says you cannot stop a bus adjacent to a right turn lane, because in that situation, the bus has to stop in the right turn lane. The bus gets over as far as possible in the right turn lane and lets the students off. So the rule is you cannot make a stop in a lane of traffic adjacent to a right turn lane. And the problem arises in some other areas where the highway has a middle of the highway turn in either direction, and the bus therefore needs to stop adjacent to a turn lane. And I think I was kind of misstating that a little bit, but the rule needs to be changed to allow vehicles to stop adjacent to a turn lane when it's in the middle of the highway to turn either direction, because that's the only option in some situations.
Mr. Chair, just to jump in and clarify that, currently the rule reads turn lane, and it's meant to prohibit stops next to a right turn lane, but you've got increasing numbers of highways that have a center lane in which you can have left turns from either direction. And so currently in the state, the turn lane, if you can't stop, and it, like if you go up to 169 north of Brainerd, it's miles and miles and miles of a turn lane in the middle, and it would be the buses are prohibited by rule from stopping next to a turn lane. What we're trying to do is say they would be prohibited from stopping in your right turn lane, adjacent to a right turn lane, but that the turn lane where they could stop would be and let off kids, you know, adjacent to a turn lane, a left turn lane.
Thank you. Mr. Botsick?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, I am Gary Botsick, and I represent the Minnesota School Bus Operators Association. And David mentioned earlier that the private sector guys, if you will, my clients transport about 58% of the kids every morning and every evening to and from school. That's part of the reason they're not here today is starting Friday, I tried to get a couple of them to come and with each colder day, and particularly this morning, those folks are hands-on, and they made sure the buses started and kept going, and I'm just knocking wood and pray to God everything went well today because it was a tough day in Minnesota, and it's a very tough day for schools. I'm proud that our schools met, it's a difficult day. You can imagine our drivers face, whether they're working for the district or whether they're working for the district under contract through my companies, their reputation, their businesses, their livelihood, and their kids, most importantly, on the line every day. So, Senator Hahn, I mentioned your driving experience, and yes. School buses are a big part of all of our lives. We either rode them or drove them. I guess you know it's a big part of being a Minnesotan. And I remember growing up on the farm, and one of my dairy farmer friends, my folks' age, you know, and they had kids on a different school bus, but he picked us up every morning, and he smelled like a dairy farmer a little bit, you know, but we did too, so it didn't really matter to us. We could smell the money in dairy back then. Not now, I don't think you could smell the money in dairy, but that, it's a big part of our lives, and it's school bus safety is even a bigger part of our lives, and as I mentioned earlier, it's something my clients and the gentleman to my immediate left here face every day, and it's getting tougher and tougher, and we want those school buses. I think you heard enough about the manufacturing. They're the safest vehicles on the road. They do have armor. I mean, they've got more armor, I think, than some of our vehicles in Iraq, I think, as far as rollover potential. But they're good. But they can be better, and that's why these standards are updated every 5 years. And the bus companies, and they're down to how many manufacturers are left? Three, four, five, if that?
Three of the large buses.
So there's only three manufacturers left in the entire country, and they talk, you know, they work. These school buses are about $50,000 a piece.
Twice that.
Go further. Okay, $100,000 a piece. Thank you, with inflation. Thanks, Jan. So they're expensive, and you see the fleets parked on Rice Street and in your districts. They're everywhere, and they're a very important part of our society. So we support the legislation. We've worked on it. A lot of it was ready for last year. There's some changes from last year, and as David mentioned, there's a few more changes that are still in the works, so we hope to be able to bring you a bill here in the next couple weeks. I see the language was introduced in the House today, and I think we're still shopping for an author in the Senate, so don't call us, we'll call you. If you're interested, let us know. So my president is from Marshall, Minnesota. My past president is from Baxter. My board of directors represents the entire state of Minnesota, so appreciate your time, and I'll try to answer any questions as well.
Senator Olsen, Lynch, and Hahn.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I didn't see anything in the proposal about stop arm cameras or cameras within the bus. Do you guys take a position on either one of those?
Mr. Chair, we...
Mr. Vanderwall.
It's an interesting thing. One of the districts I'm working with right now has actually put four cameras in each of the buses. In every bus in their district. They're working on that. They started it this year, and they're going to get that done by the end of next year. It's about an $800,000 proposition. And as long as we can't, we're taking money out of transportation, out of the classroom right now to run transportation, we really can't talk about adding even a very good safety improvement like this onto a bus while we have to deal with the funding we've got. Now, if somebody could come and say, well, put cameras on buses, and here's the funding to do it, I think we would all be in favor of it. And by the way, I'll mention to you that this week I got rid of a bus driver in my district who, because we put a camera on the bus, a parent called and reported that the driver was driving, talking on the cell phone. And we had talked to him, and he absolutely said that doesn't happen. And we put the camera on the bus, didn't talk about it with the driver, just put it on there and got it back. And up until he looked at himself in the video and heard himself talking on the phone while he was picking up kids and dropping them off, he denied it. And he is now a former school bus driver. So there's absolute value in having cameras on buses. We have two cameras on and boxes in all of our buses, and we put them on a random basis, and every bus says there's a camera in there and the red light's on. So I'd like to have the cameras, but until we see the money, we're not going to have cameras.
A quick follow-up.
Senator Olsen.
Do you find you have many stop-arm violations?
We have stop-arm
violations.
Mr. Chair. We have stop-arm violations every day. We go out and work with our local police on occasions and get some people to get some tickets issued. And the last time I had one go to court, the judge threw it out, saying that just going to court was enough of a lesson for the young lady who ran the stop arm. We see stop arms with violations going on with people talking on cell phones, and we just see it happening because they're busy getting to work in the morning.
Thank you.
Senator Lynch.
Chair Weger, members of the panel, I appreciate the opportunity to take a look at this in its developmental stages, and a good segue your last comments regarding cell phone usage, and that's the area that I want to address specifically on page 6 of the draft in subdivision 9. I found it interesting. I understand your rationale and your reasoning for including cell phones in this proposal. And you made some valid comments about the pertinent use of cell phones versus your conventional two-way radios. I do think it's interesting, however, that you pinpoint that the way I read this is that it's okay for cell phones to be used so long as it's not for personal reasons. And I would just entertain that I'm not sure that I am comfortable or in favor of drivers talking on their cell phones for any purpose while that bus is in operation, particularly if the utilization of the cell phone is explicitly to be used for emergency communication. So I would just entertain that might be an area to take a further look at.
Response, Mr. Lundell.
Mr. Chair, Senator Lynch, one of the problems we have is that in some parts of the state, the cell phone is the only method of communication that works. If you get out by the Buffalo Ridge, I could have Bob Duncan from Wyndham come in. And for him, the two-way radio, because of the topography out there, it's impossible for him to use the two-way radio to the effect that he needs communication. He does, the communication does work with the cell phone. So I guess there has to be, and we're finding that in some cases, many school districts, for whatever reason, are finding the cell phone to be a more efficient use. And so what we're trying to do, an efficient way of doing the two-way communication. And so what we're trying to do is really narrow down the amount of cell phone use and to make sure that it would be only used for professional purposes, whether that be for emergency or to and fro. Times I know that a number of districts do use them, and we can get you better statistics on that or more. But it is, in many cases, it is the way that districts are being forced to communicate.
Senator Lynch.
Chair Weger, thank you for the clarification. Again, I'm not questioning that it's not a valid use. I'm just suggesting that I'm not sure that the bus driver should be driving down the road and talking on the cell phone for any reason.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Vanderwall.
Senator Lynch, one of the things that's not in here that we could talk about is maybe that there should be a requirement that it be hands-free. Because right now, if it's a two-way radio, the driver pulls the microphone down, he's got a hand or she's got a hand on the microphone off the wheel and got the same kind of conversation going on. And there is need for conversation. It would be hard to have a bus traveling down the road. Somebody wants to know why the bus is late. The bus has to stop and answer the phone, why is the bus late, then get going again and be later. So, you know, there's practicalities to it, but I think there are other ways that we can also make it a safe transaction.
Two senators have follow-ups on cell phone. Senator Olson and Senator Rummel, then to Senator Hand.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I just was wondering if this was the official hearing on this bill. I mean, this is a little unusual to be going through in the detail and having a, virtually a committee hearing on a bill that hasn't even yet been introduced, or are we going to act on it today?
No, we're not acting on anything to provide overview. People that have asked, in light of no action last year and continuing concerns, what might be done. There were specific suggestions here that are still being worked on, but it was a way to...
Well, Mr. Chairman, is this the bill that you said has been introduced in the House? So it isn't a draft. I mean, obviously, when you come before a committee, you can make modifications, but this is the bill you intend to introduce in the Senate as well. Okay.
Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. VanderWaal, am I reading this correctly? On page 6, line 6.5, it suggests that school bus drivers may not operate the bus while communicating over whatever device. So, and Senator Lynch is just laughing.
For personal reasons.
But for any reason or just personal reasons?
Mr. Chairman, I believe this is just for personal reasons that in the way this language is here, and I think that's work in progress to talk about.
Thank you.
Sarah Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just a question. I remember it was either last year or the year before, we had a bill that dealt with some school buses that were faultily constructed, intended to collapse when they were in a rollover, and I'm trying to recall the specifics of that, but I think it had to do with whatever the standards were and how buses were constructed. Is that something that this is addressing? Is that a problem that has been resolved? And I know we were trying to help some districts that had purchased some of these buses and they were trying to get rid of them, but is that something that has been addressed in these?
Lundell.
Mr. Chair, Senator Hand, that was the Carpenter bus issue, and it was the reason it had to come before the legislature is because the buses were faulty and the Carpenter company had gone out of business, so districts had no recourse except to replace the buses, and so they were given levy authority to replace those buses. So those buses, the faulty buses, have been found and have been... Mr. Chair, I also want to mention that Denny Coughlin is here today from the Minneapolis School District. Just wanted to recognize him. He has served on the National Congress for bus standards, and he's stand up, Denny. He has done a lot of work on these issues, and he's a great resource for these types of questions that you might have in the future about how that bus Congress operates and some of the things that how they come to decisions on a variety of issues.
Thank you. Further questions by the committee? And I believe there was reference earlier that the amount of hours and training has been reduced, and we'll see recommendations addressing that. There was reference, too, to the fact that prior to Captain Urquhart, was it Captain Lazenberry, was it a full-time responsibility then by the captain? And Captain Urquhart, you would know, but... You're in charge of trucks as well, and wondering, is there a issue as to how effectively you're able to get everything done, or does it work well with multiple tasks?
Well, Mr. Chairman, members, Major Lazenberry held that position before myself, and he didn't spend his entire time school bus issues. There was a portion of it, but it was a significant portion. A little bit different than he is. I command the division that does all the truck and bus enforcement education, and all the regulatory activities involved in Minnesota, earmarked toward those kinds of vehicles and/or their drivers. So my scope of responsibilities are a bit more broader than his were. So they are correct about my responsibilities greater than his were. I inherited this the message was, geez, you got the rest of the trucks and buses? So.
And I believe Major Lazenberry had an advisory committee. Is there still an advisory committee?
Mr. Chairman, members of that advisory committee, I believe sunsetted a number of years ago. Pupil transportation.
Okay.
In lieu of that advisory committee, we do have active committees, what we call the School Bus Safety Committee that meets monthly. Committee that meets monthly through the Department of Education. So it's not like that we don't have active participants from the industry and or those departments that need to be involved in school bus safety meeting on a regular basis.
Okay. I know Senator Robertson used to devote a lot of time on this issue as the Senate liaison on that, and whether there's any merit as you look at what we eventually put together. But I remember how well prepared she was in addressing recommendations at the table. So something to keep in mind, but appreciate that you do have groups advising as well. Linking it with the policy makers is sometimes helpful, too.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members.
Senator Rummel.
Mr. Chair and Captain Urquhart, in reference to the chairman's question, maybe asking it a different way. I notice on the handout you gave us, we have 19,586 school bus drivers that are endorsed. And the random spot checks were 350 drivers. Do you think that's sufficient to give us a good picture of how things are going?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, members, no, I don't believe that is a good picture. First of all, to quantify the number, that's a census that I received from the Driver and Vehicle Services Division in the Department of Public Safety for calendar year 2005. So that's basically a rough number there, that 19,000. The number of our spot checks on drivers is, in my eyes, is far from adequate because, as you can see, even the small amount that we do look at, there are some significant issues there, and we should not see problems with school bus drivers. We just should not see it. And to reflect on a couple, that the drunk driver in Richfield just recently. And our goal here is really to spend more time with those drivers in the future and or the people that manage those drivers in a cooperative effort, either to provide education or reinforcement. And I know sometimes the word enforcement can be a tough word, but it comes to that sometimes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions? Senator Bonhoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure which of you would have the answer to this question, but how are we doing with our recruitment of drivers? I know last year at one of the hearings we talked about there was a shortage of drivers, and I know in my district, my kids go to Hopkins, they've talked about that. How is that problem coming?
Mr. Chair, I'll venture an opinion, as we all would. It's an economic issue. When unemployment is down, then we have a tough time getting bus drivers. Bus drivers can find something else to do, and many of them would rather do something else than have 70 kids behind them every day. You can attest to that, Senator. But on the other hand, in my district this year, on my personal basis, we've had some turnover in drivers. We had one this week involuntarily. But for the most part, it's been a pretty stable year. So I don't feel like it's the worst year we've ever had. But the unemployment rate isn't that low yet.
Thank you.
Senator Henn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I appreciate your comment. I just maybe a little story for amusement, but one of the things when I was driving a bus, it was for the city of St. Paul, the Columbia Transit, and there was a school that was called the Behavioral Learning Center, which was over on Lexington and West 7th. And they took all the elementary kids in the district that time and they put them in one building, the ones that were having trouble in the regular classroom. And that was the bus route I had. And some of those bus rides were pretty exciting. And they gave us a lot of training on how to deal with this. So the staff, the school, they had a particular program they were working. And they were very good, I thought, about helping us out. And one of the things they told us is that if you were driving on your way home and you're going to have trouble with the kids acting out, the way to handle it was to turn around and go back and start over again, because their motive was to get home, and if they were delayed. So usually only had to do that once in a year, and that kind of sent the message. But the behavioral issues is a big deal. I think when you talked earlier about the the seat backs. That's another thing. If you can't see the kids, you don't know what they're doing, and that could be a problem. So, but I appreciate your testimony, and thanks for coming.
Thank you for sharing. Further questions? Okay, I'd like to thank each of the witnesses for their helpful background and suggestions. We'll be visiting this topic within the next 2 or 3 weeks. At this point, we have approximately 15 or so proposals, bills, and perhaps 5 or so hearing requests. And I know that number will rapidly escalate in the next couple of weeks. A couple of informational items. We had an extensive background hearing on QComp and heard from districts where it's working, others where there were suggestions. We had asked the commissioner's staff to develop a response. I remember Leroy Ostrander district, and keep in mind there were some very good testimonials as well, but we also wanted to look at areas that we can improve on to meet the spirit of the law. And we'll be awaiting that report hopefully soon. Another item, I think each of us shared the frustration on No Child Left Behind, testing requirements. And I, Senator Rummel and I met with Chaz Anderson and a few others that have expressed concerns on the issue as to what can be done at the federal level. And yes, we have a resolution, but what are some of the specific things as they mark up the reauthorization bill that we can recommend to Congressman Miller, to Senator Kennedy, and recognizing as well that Governor Plenty is in a position with the Governor's Association conference to provide some leadership and change in addressing the needed flexibility. We have bipartisan agreement on that, so we asked Chaz Anderson to develop some recommendations as to what can be done at the federal level, and we hope to have something no later than March 1st. And this will be brought back to us, but asked a number of people from Ed Minnesota, some of the organizations representing the administrators, the business partnership, but there's an ad hoc group that she's putting together, and I wanted you to be aware of that as a follow-up from that hearing. A couple other things we're working on, and I'm hopeful, especially for those of you that are able to join us at Two Harbors and to Cloquet, that we can discuss some of the follow-up items as we approach the hearing process formally on bills in the next 2 to 3 weeks. And I'll need to meet with Senator Stump as we look at the recommendations as they have an impact on the budget. And, you know, there is a difference in the committees, but there's overlap as well as we discuss issues. And we will be working on that. And as always, for any of you that have a suggestion, an idea, a topic that you want to make sure that we address, or to make sure that we visit your district, let me know, and we will follow up right away. Any questions by the committee? Very good. Thank you again, everyone. This committee is adjourned. Oh, okay. Can I take that?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Town Hall. Actually, it might end up being a real official hearing. What we're doing is when we're going to see the law on this.